customer experience and transparency. So far, in my view, the established schemes have done a great job when it comes to that, and they need to be on the alert, however, with new technology and new players in the game. So today, customers, in my view, they don't compare payment schemes with other payment schemes. They compare every payment experience with the best digital payment experience they've ever had, whether it's ordering a ride, streaming a movie, or shopping online. So that's the difference that has evolved over time.
So then, happy and warm welcome to the next episode of our Pay19 Payment Podcast. And today we have the honor to be on the facility of Giesecke & Devrient here in Munich, in parallel to the European Payment Association, or the PayTech Forum here in Munich, also hosted by GND. And I have the pleasure to have today as our podcast guest, Rüdiger Vogt is with me. So hello, Rüdiger.
Hi. So, thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. It's a pleasure. It's on our end. What we want to discuss today is we want to look a little bit deeper into certain topics. So that means we want to have a short look together with you, Rüdiger, on the payment landscape. Yeah, where we are currently, what are the next things which are coming up in terms of European initiatives and things like that. And then we also want to have a look on what is important for all these initiatives and schemes we are seeing in the market in terms of trust and trustability. And also want to have a look at the most important things, which is the UX of the end customer. Yeah, because every scheme has certain challenges, and UX is one of the most important and interesting things, especially for the retail companies. And in the end, we want to close a little bit with the outlook. So just to get a short head start, I would really like to ask you, Rüdiger, just to give a short introduction of your current role at GND and even more at Netcetera.
Yes, happy to do that. So again, thanks for having me. Short, let's see. I'm with the GND group now for 18 years. So let's see how short that gets. the last 2 years with GND and et cetera. During my time, we've seen the incredible development of GND, right? So adding digital solutions to products and services in the physical world. And through the acquisition of what is now GND and et cetera, GND has laid the foundation for the digital powerhouse in the areas of trusted software, digital banking and payments and identification. So that was also my reason why I joined GND and et cetera, because I did see this digital agenda, of course, coming up. And it's really cool to work in a company that is expanding in this field. My focus is first of all, sales operations for the GND and et cetera group as a whole, making sure we use the right processes and tools and sales to grow our business and ensure transparency and communication between the divisions. And now coming, because you mentioned the German perspective. So as you know, GND is a German company founded in Leipzig, 1852, long time ago. And GND and et cetera has been active in the German market for many years in the payment space, mostly with 3D secure solutions. And now we've recently added payment processing power in country through the acquisition of the former Bankverlag. And I, in addition, thought that expanding our local offering in the areas of mobile banking, financial advisory and wealth management, of course, is very interesting for the German market. So from the digital euro to the Altersvorsorge Depot, the German market has a lot of opportunities to offer. And in my MD role, I'm facilitating our growth from hiring to connecting with potential new clients. So that was a very long answer to your short question.
Yeah, but it implies a lot of experience, even on your personal career and even also on the development of the company of Giesecke & Devrient, where you see a lot of new changes or a lot of changes within the company scope, just to meet the requirements from the market. I would really like to have a short cliffhanger to be created with you because I have seen in the research that you worked at the head of Payment 4.0 during your time. Let's take that and put that aside, and probably we can catch up on that later on, because I'm really interested in what is payment 4.0 meaning. So now let's coming back to the topics. Let's have a look on the payment landscape as I outlined. And there I would really like to start with a short overview of the established schemes, where we are currently, what does it mean when we are looking at 2026, where are we with the classical networks, what has really shifted in the last years, and what is the narrative, for the card is finished, or is this not really true?
What we're seeing is that card payments remain incredibly strong. G&D is one of the key players in the physical card business, and I've been working in the physical card business for 16 years, my professional life. We still see a stable demand in Europe for the next years, driven by, for example, fintechs and neobanks on the physical cards. And card payments, of course, continue to evolve further with innovations like click-to-pay, tokenization, and enhanced authentication. So I would say that the card is anything but dead, to your question.
Okay. And if we go a little bit deeper, what do you think? Will there be on the long run or on the midterm a coexistence of the physical and the digital card from your perspective?
We've seen a stronger adoption of digital wallets over the last years, for sure, especially with the younger generation, but also with old people like me. Convenience is key here. So you have your phone with you all the time. Authentication through face recognition works really fast. At the same time, I still have 4 physical cards in my wallet, and I think I'm not alone with that. Maybe not everybody has 4 cards, but I think everybody has a physical card in their wallet. For me, it's a reassurance that I can pay also with an empty battery on my phone, or in case the point of sale terminal does not accept my digital wallet. So there's reasons why we carry physical cards. There are also bank customers that see a metal card as a status symbol.
Still.
And G&D has fintech clients that I was taking care of under payment 4.0.
Oh,
That see a physical card as a fashion item, and that have brought out limited editions, actually, of physical cards. And there are still also many people that do not or do not want to use a smartphone as an instrument for payment. Right. So let's not forget also that from a branding perspective, a payment card is perhaps the only physical connection to your issuer, right, as a consumer. So
absolutely. And if we are looking still a little bit further, when we are seeing what is currently on the horizon, we see some new rails, which is Vero on the one hand, which is the digital euro on the other hand. Is this a threat for the established schemes, or will this be something complementary, or neither of both?
Or both at the same time. So Vero is addressing a very real opportunity. It builds on Europe's instant payment infrastructure and has the ambitions to offer a European account-to-account payment experience that in the end works seamlessly for consumers and merchants. That's particularly attractive then for use cases like peer-to-peer payments and also increasingly e-commerce, right? And then the digital euro has a different objective again. It's not primarily about competing with existing payment methods. It's about ensuring that central bank money remains available in the digital age. And it's also supporting Europe's monetary sovereignty. So different purposes, and actually not to forget about, of course, established international card schemes. On the other hand, they continue to bring enormous strength, global acceptance, mature fraud protection, loyalty ecosystems, and decades of operational resilience. So each of those has a right to exist. And from my perspective, these aren't necessarily competing propositions, but they're complementary capabilities indeed.
Yeah. Okay, so just to summarize, so you are convinced that we will see all three of them, let's call three, because we have the established schemes and then Vero and digital euro all in parallel at the same time. This is something you can imagine.
Absolutely. So in addition to some of the other payment rails that we haven't even mentioned here that are in existence today.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, good. based on your experience as an MD for Netcetera, yeah, if we look on the, let's say, German perspective on the issuer side, how is the German market currently reacting to those new rails? And what do Netcetera's issuer or acquirers actually see today in the volume? Mm-hmm. Is there already some impact you can see, or is this which is still far away on?
Yeah, I think that the German market is, you could best describe it as pragmatically evolving. So if you look at issuers, acquirers and banks, they're all asking the same question, basically, which payment rails will create lasting value for customers and merchants? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, consumers don't choose a payment rail, in my view, they choose the experience. So now issuers and acquirers are under pressure to support the growing variety of payments that we've just laid out, right? Therefore, success is becoming less about promoting one payment rail, and it's more about orchestrating many of them efficiently. And the winners in this, in my view, will be the institutions that can offer customers choice while delivering the same high levels of security, convenience, and trust across every payment experience.
We have a valid point. Let's come to that in a few seconds, a little bit deeper, when we have a dedicated view on the UX part of the different approaches. But before that, we can probably point our attention to the trust level. Yeah, trust as a foundation of every scheme. Yeah, no matter if we are talking about the digital euro, Vero, or established things, established schemes rest on decades, and this is what you already mentioned. Yeah, they created a lot of trust over the years. Yeah, how fragile is this foundation today, and which signals, yeah, will threaten to shake it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trust is extremely important. Whether we're talking about banknotes, so GND's original business, the printed freedom, as some call it. Or whether we're talking about if you trust an AI agent in agentic commerce, for example, mm-hmm. right? So trust is the biggest asset in payments, but it's also a perishable asset. You don't protect it by standing still. You protect it by continuously improving security, customer experience, and transparency. So far, in my view, the established schemes have done a great job when it comes to that, and they need to be on the alert, however, mm-hmm. with new technology and new players in the game. So today, customers, in my view, they don't compare payment schemes with other payment schemes. They compare every payment experience with the best digital payment experience they've ever had, whether it's ordering a ride, streaming a movie, or shopping online. So that's the difference that has evolved over time.
Coming back to the trust, you said in our pre-discussions, and I really like this example you have provided me, because I was not really aware that this is something really important today, because you have been told me a story about the fake banknotes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is currently still an issue. Probably you can outline for our audience once again the example you provided me, that there's already something which needs to be done to keep the trust even in the banknotes nowadays.
Yes, for the banknotes, for example, in order to check if they're legit, you need to have a good software and a good processing machine from GND, ideally. This software, however, needs to be updated, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where digital meets the physical world. If you have new fraud patterns, for example, coming up, new fake banknotes, a certain type of new fake banknotes coming into play into the market, then you can update the software of the banknote processing machines, and by that make sure that you detect those new fake banknotes. That being said, you need a connection in order to do that, yeah. Right? So here comes the digital world going into the physical world, really.
Yeah, but pretty interesting to mm-hmm. see that you even need to protect this approach in the current days, because I was mm-hmm. not really aware that this is so time critical. Yeah. If we are going back to the trust aspect, if we see the new, let's say, opponents in the market, which are currently coming into the market, what do you think, what is needed for them, yeah, especially in the DACH region, yeah, to build a certain trust level?
Mm-hmm. So in my view, coming from the consumer side, consumers don't adopt a new wallet or a digital currency because it's technically superior, they adopt it because it solves a real problem better than any other alternatives they have. So you can take the example of contactless payments. The tipping point was reached only when three ingredients came together: trust, convenience, and broad acceptance. Plus, you can take COVID as a catalyst for that. So in my view, the first pillar is security. So people need to know that their money and their personal data are protected. That's where strong authentication, digital identity, fraud prevention, and privacy by design become essential. And trust is earned every day, so transaction by transaction. In this case, for you as a consumer, no news is good news. The second pillar is simplicity. If onboarding takes 5 minutes longer or checkout requires extra steps, adoption will suffer. And the best payment experience is often the one that becomes almost invisible. The third pillar is the ecosystem acceptance. A wallet or a CBDC must work where people want to use it, online, in stores, peer-to-peer payments, and ideally across borders even. So without merchants, banks, payment providers, and consumers moving together, even the best technology struggles to gain traction. So consumers already have payment methods that work very well. That means any new solution has to be meaningfully better, not just different. And introducing a new CBDC, for example, means explaining the benefits to the public, to the businesses, to banks, PSPs, and to merchants, going through pilots and rolling out the infrastructure. So that's what we'll see, for example, for the digital euro moving forward. And in my view, we're talking about a multi-year adoption journey rather than a single launch event.
Yeah, absolutely. This is not taking place overnight. Okay, which technical elements from your perspective will create or undermine trust, like tokenization, 3DS, fraud prevention, authorization, and so on? And where does Netcetera's own role lies in that area?
Well, as you know, Gene, Netcetera has been creating confidence and trust for many years for clients and their customers through exactly the technology you mentioned: tokenization, protecting sensitive payment credentials by replacing the card number with a secure token, for one, and then 3D Secure, which we have developed to an intelligent risk-based authentication framework that enables strong customer authentication while allowing low-risk transactions to flow almost invisibly. So from our perspective at G&D, et cetera, with even more new payment rails emerging, the key is to make the payment experience a seamless one. And whether it's a card, an account-to-account payment, a wallet, or soon a CBDC, the underlying technology should enable secure, trusted, and frictionless experiences. So consumers shouldn't have to think about technology. They should simply think, or they should simply see and trust that it works.
Yeah.
And then you were talking about technology. We address this with three pillars. One is stronger fraud protection across all rails. So fostering cross-organizational, anonymized fraud data sharing, cross-channel fraud prevention. And then secondly, a unified experience for all payments, evolving with new features and regulations. So one platform for all digital services. And then thirdly, a seamless digital identity and authentication, protecting end users and increasing success rates across every channel. For example, using a UD wallet for identification.
Yeah. Okay, and given that this is based on a lot of experience which was gathered over the past, and what do you think, if we are talking about new rails, can they somehow rent the trust of the existing ones? Like some kind of co-badging or whatever you can imagine in that area? Or must each one build up their own trust level to the customers?
That's a very interesting question. I haven't thought about it this way, how to rent trust, actually. In my view, trust is like reputation. In the end, you have to earn it yourself. Maybe I'm a big foodie, so maybe an analogy from that world. Let me say it like this. Launching a new payment rail with the support of an established scheme is a bit like opening a restaurant with a Michelin star chef standing at the door. But people may come because of the recommendation and because of the name of the chef, but they will only come back if the food is really excellent.
Good comparison.
If they trust that the food is excellent.
Okay. Good. Yeah, just closing the trust corner and having a short look on the UI, on the UX perspective, because you already reflected to that in certain areas already of the trust corner. But how can you tell from the user interface whatever a scheme has trust, which UX signals drive purchase decisions, or which could be deal breakers?
Mm-hmm. I think the short answer is the best payment security is the one customers never notice, but always benefit from. So absolutely, perhaps the biggest trust signal is something users don't notice at all, the absence of unnecessary friction. When the payment experience is smooth, customers don't stop to ask themselves whether they trust the payment scheme. They simply complete the purchase and trust becomes invisible. From a UX perspective, there are indeed signals that can create confidence. One is consistency. If the payment journey looks and feels like the bank or the merchant already knows the customer, so that, mm-hmm. that gives consistency. Clarity. Customers want to know what's happening. Simple messages like, please confirm payment with your banking app, or you're securely verifying this transaction. That really helps in this context. Speed is important. Users associate speed with competence. And then lastly, recognition. So familiar bank branding, well-known payment logos, as in the scheme logos, mm-hmm. for example, or the Euro logo, and consistent authentication methods. So this is what I think is driving confidence. When we talk about deal breakers, I think you and I, we've seen them all, right? We've been there. Unfamiliar screens, unexpected redirects, too many authentication steps, confusing mm-hmm. error messages, repeated requests to enter the same information. And worst of all, a perfectly legitimate transaction being declined without explanation, right? So that's counterintuitive to trust, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's it's interesting because I have a pretty similar view on that. If we are looking at the authentication itself, because you already mentioned this the invisibility of the whole payment or even of the authentication is one key element. How is authorization and security made almost invisible? And where is the line in which invisibility tips over into distrust?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that through intelligent orchestration. Take a typical online payment. So what's going on behind the scenes? There may be tokenization protecting the card credentials, risk engines analyzing hundreds of data points, EMV 3D Secure exchanging the contextual information between merchant and issuers, and lately, of course, AI models assessing whether the transaction really looks genuine. And the customer may simply approve the payment with face ID or a fingerprint, or not even be challenged at all because the transaction is considered low risk, right? So mm-hmm. that's a very good case. So from the consumer's perspective, it feels easy. That's exactly how it should be. However, if security becomes too invisible, users can start wondering, did anything really happen? Yeah, what is my payment secure? Do I really authorize this? That's why the best payment experience combines invisible protection with simple reassurance. And simple confirmation messages, recognizable bank branding, familiar authentication method, clear notification after payment, all of this helps. These are small UX elements, but they create a powerful sense of confidence. So this is how I would describe how you create trust.
Okay, mm-hmm. good. And just from the UX perspective, just to let's have a look on the different schemes. Yeah. Do we see a similar way how they are handling the UX experience on the schemes? Is there, let's say, a common standard which will be established, or do, as you already mentioned in the previous part, that you said they are serving different needs? Yeah. Will there be the same UX for all the different schemes, or is this, mm-hmm. as I said, a joint standard?
Yeah. I think the UX is converging because customer expectations are converging, right? So in my view, nobody wants to reinvent checkout anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Sure. So it already exists. Innovation is moving now from visible differences on the screen more to invisible intelligence behind the scenes. So better security, smarter authentication, faster processing, more personalization. Where I do see conscious differentiation, indeed, is behind the interface. So, for example, account-to-account payments may emphasize immediate account-based settlement and integration with instant payments. And then card-based schemes continue to innovate around global acceptance, dispute management, loyalty programs, and the tokenized wallet experience. So those are important differences, but from the consumer's perspective, they should feel increasingly feel equally equally easy.
Well, absolutely makes sense, yeah. So these are, let's say, the official things we want to cover. And as we already outlined in the beginning, these are the topics we want to have a look at. So just trying to close this a little bit up. Rüdiger, from now on, if you have a look forward, let's say 5 years ahead, what does the European payment scheme landscape could look like? And where does G&D, et cetera, is seeing their role?
I would say more colorful than now. So you will have more variety, as we've already discussed. There will be hopefully a digital euro with a broad acceptance, taking the euro currency into the digital age. And at the same time, in this context, then the orchestration becomes really, really important. And to have interfaces and to have solutions that are consolidating the different payment methods for a merchant and also for an issuer. And that's where G&D, et cetera, will play a major role, be it on the CBDC side or be it on the traditional payment rails that we see today already.
And just given, let's say, the idea that you have the power to, let's say, create the German market, what do you wish most urgently for the German payment market? And to be a little bit more realistic, what is really possible?
Yeah, I'm German, but I'm also an EU citizen. And in my personal view, the member states might still underestimate the power that this amazing union has. So you can probably already guess the answer. I'm very much looking forward to the digital euro and the introduction. Why? It's preserving public money in the digital age. It's supporting financial inclusion and it's enabling new payment experiences. And we've only just started looking at the different use cases, be it machine to machine payments, AI, agent commerce, programmable business processes or frictionless cross-channel payment journeys. So I think this is a real game changer. Realistically, not tomorrow, but within the next years.
Okay. Yeah. So, and if you have the possibility to give one message to the issuers, acquirers or merchants, which are currently asking them in the currently, let's say, a little bit complex, a little bit fast or slow moving, depend on the point of view. What should I do tomorrow, or what is the most important thing I need to take care of?
It's actually what we do in the workshops that we're doing with our clients twice a year. Actually, we have it once on the digital banking side and once on the payment side. Don't start with the technology is what we tell our clients. Start with the customer journey and the capabilities you will need, let's say, in 5 years from now. And let us help, as G&D and et cetera, let us help you turn uncertainty into an actionable roadmap for the next generations of payments. So let us take care of the technology while you know your business best, right?
Okay. Good. Thank you very much, Rüdiger. I learned a lot. And we still have 2 minutes time on our clock, so we can come back to the initial question I had for you, because I would really like to understand what is the head of payment 4.0?
What it was at the time, yeah. This was a time when fintechs and especially neobanks were emerging And this was a new segment for G&D to be active in particular on the physical payment cards. At the same time, we had new form factors like wearable payments coming up. And we were actually looking for a catch-all phrase for this new business that was emerging. And we called it on the payment side, and we called it Payment 4.0. So in an analogy to Industry 4.0. And it was an interesting time. For G&D, because for the first time, we started to work with agile players like the neobanks and the fintechs. And initially, we thought, oh, it's very hard for us to do that. Ah, it's really tough. Eventually, we built a team of willing, mostly younger colleagues that were then addressing these markets and that were really burning for those topics. And we won the first clients in the Americas, in North America, and then also in Europe. And it was really a very cool time to be in the market, because it was a period of very strong growth. And it was a period, like I've mentioned, where we were showing the industry that the payment card, the physical payment card, was not dead, because we did some really cool launches with rappers in the US, for example, with very big payment players. So good times.
Yeah, sounds pretty. Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting and pretty thinking ahead. So interesting to know. So thank you very much, Rüdiger, for your explanations. My main takeaways for today, I really like the explanation regarding the UX, that you don't expect some, let's say, new invention on the front end side, but still a large variety on the back end side, depending on the purpose. Yeah, I really like the idea, and I'm always a fan of the invisible part of the payment, as you also mentioned. Yes. So I think this will be definitely something we will probably see in the near future, that payment is getting more and more to the back. So nevertheless, I would really like each and everyone who has taken the time to listen to our podcast. Yeah, the podcast is available on all common platforms. And I would really like to give a last hint to our payment festival of the P19, which will take place on the 25th of November. So there will be a lot of topics we discussed or touched today. Discussed in further detail at the festival, and probably we will see Rüdiger or some colleagues of his at the event itself. So thank you very much, Rüdiger, for the conversation.
Thank you.